Well, good morning to you, 6:06, and it is the 9th of June, and it's pretty warm out there. I can tell you that right now. In the coming days of the end of Obama, what kind of crazy and utterly indefensible policies, tricks, and stunts will this political phenom fall into earth foist upon the American people? Sean Hannity was right, wasn't he, when he asked, what if the GOP and so-called conservatives, let alone the neocons, had battled against Obama the way they have done the Donald? We'd be living in a different world. Now, the border is under a deluge, overrun and permanently at siege, and we are just left to wonder, who are the people showing up? Where are they from? What is their intent and danger level? It is all very disconcerting. You need look no further than the border to understand the broad and at times highly dysfunctional appeal of Donald Trump. One person who stands up unafraid of recriminations against the madness of unfettered immigration, ultra capitulation to such foreign enemies as Iran, craven failure to staunch the deficit hemorrhage, and utterly unafraid to say America first. Whether he's being honest or not, nobody knows. Can Trump beat Hillary? Is he just an empty demagogue? Will he save America from being pushed over the precipice by the mad and blind leftists intent on destroying the world and rebuilding it in their own image? Only God and the future knows. Stay tuned, sports fans. I do want to mention to you, good morning to you, by the way, Kelly here, get some coffee brewing there, my friends. And I got a temperature here for you of 73 degrees. It was scorching yesterday. I mean, you know, the way the temperature moves up in this valley at times is just shocking. I wanted to mention to you yesterday, I played that kind of brief clip between Alex Jones and that guy. I can't even remember his name, but the guy that helped start Vice.com, Vice TV and everything. And talking about how these people, these far leftists, don't even really have a plan of what the aftermath is going to look like if they get their way. And the culture war is over. According to a lot of people, the right has lost, the conservatives have lost, and now the conservatives have to kind of look down and recalculate, try to figure out where they're at. But I mean, it is the type of idiotic leadership that the GOP has had in trying to rebrand itself as Democrat light that brought us John McCain and Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney, who's not satisfied with the amount of damage he's already done because he wants to run a third party, and gets up and says that, you know, calls Donald Trump a liar, which, I mean, I don't even know how he would be in a position to say that. But anyway, be that as it may, the reason that we're in the place that we're in is because the right has failed to lead. The GOP has failed to do its job. And then as the world starts to fall apart farther and farther, they start pointing fingers at Donald Trump. What if for the last 8 years, somebody had stood up to Obama on all of these crazy ideas that he's had? You know, how can you disagree with that as an analysis when they're going after Trump for not being pure-hearted enough and all of the stuff that is in the aftermath? It's like the GOP, the Democrats, you could argue, don't really care as long as the world is changing, as long as minimum wage is going up, as long as the border is open. I mean, fill in the blank there of all the stuff that they're in favor of and where these ideas come from. I mean, the Democrats of 30 years ago would have been absolutely shocked at the stuff that the Democrats stand for now. But, you know, it is what it is, and the world has changed, and the GOP is either going to get its act together and embrace that fact and fight back instead of standing around and pulling hands and saying that they're going to fight against Donald Trump and put him in his place. So to save the party, what party? What does the GOP stand for exactly, by the way? I'm not I don't have any idea what the GOP stands for other than power. But if they really cared about power, why would they have run people that would, by definition, lose? McCain, Romney, people that quit, you know, Mitt Romney quit. So, anyway, speaking of quitting, well, they're not quitting, but here is a little on Tai Chan, which was pushed out of the news a little bit by the aftermath of the votes. And here's a little bit from KRQE. Tai Chan murder trial, local, big deal, cop shoots cop. And here's KRQE. Jerry Martin's family becomes emotional as mistrial declared.
But first, it's a mistrial. After almost 14 hours of deliberations, a jury could not decide the fate of a Santa Fe County Sheriff's deputy accused of murdering a fellow deputy.
Jurors told the judge a few hours ago there was no way they could all agree on a verdict. News 13's Haley Rush has been covering this trial in Las Cruces from the very beginning, and she is live at District Court. Haley?
Jessica Dean, obviously the jury had a lot to consider here, going over 2 weeks worth of testimony in 2 days. In the end, they couldn't get on the same page.
And again, you're not anticipating with any further deliberation that there will be any movement related to any of the three charges.
That was not the question I asked.
And I noted that they were not moving from the rest.
Essentially, jurors had four decisions to choose from. The jury told the judge one person wanted to convict Chan of first-degree murder, six believed it was second degree, and then five jurors voted voluntary manslaughter. It was October 2014 when investigators say Chan shot and killed Jeremy Martin, a fellow Santa Fe County Sheriff's deputy, at a Las Cruces hotel after a night of drinking and arguing. Martin was unarmed, shot in the back while running away. Chan says it was self-defense, claiming Martin attacked him. Both Chan and Martin's family spoke to us after the mistrial. Chan described what waiting for a verdict these past 2 days were like.
I don't think words can describe nervous and scared and terrified and all of those emotions combined into one.
They know he's guilty. It's just a question of whether they want to put a civil servant like Chan, a former civil servant like Chan, away for 5, 15, or 30 years.
Martin's family tells us they're not giving up. The district attorney's office told us they plan on retrying the case as soon as possible. Now, Chan's attorneys say this is still self-defense, and they plan on being ready if there is a trial. Chan is still charged with first-degree murder. Dean Jess, back to you.
All right, thank you, Haley.
All right, so here's a little bit. Tai Chan juror discusses what led to mistrial. And this is from KOAT.
Nervous that this, you know, you might have to go through a trial again and there might be a different outcome.
Of course I'm nervous. I mean, this is a scary thing. It's a terrifying process.
A mistrial does not mean Chan is a free man. He's still facing a first-degree murder charge for the 2014 death of his coworker, Jeremy Martin. Prosecutors can now either drop the charge, offer Chan a plea deal, or take him to court again. For now, the district attorney says,
I will, in fact, retry this case. I will not consider a plea in this case unless the family is totally and completely on board.
Martin's family broke down when they heard the jury could not reach a unanimous decision. Well, tonight we know how their votes broke down. The lead juror says they voted for each possible charge separately, and for first-degree murder, only one person thought Chan was guilty. When they voted for second-degree murder, six chose to convict him. Then finally, for voluntary manslaughter, just five.
He turned around and he had a gun in his hand.
Chan took the stand a few days before and said Martin attacked him with a gun first. The defense claimed police rushed to arrest him for murder instead of vet his self-defense claim.
Is there something you do differently in the second trial? I mean, they attacked you guys' investigation, the case.
I think the case is sound, despite this results in this case, that we'll get a different result next case.
Now, attorneys on both sides can choose to contact jurors and ask them why they voted how they did. It's information that could be invaluable in case there's that second trial. Back to you.
Now, it makes you wonder, it is probably in Tai Chan's best interest to get if he can get any kind of a good plea deal out of this. And it may be in the interest of both the DA, if there are some fatal flaws in the case. And it's a case of state of mind. Everybody agrees that Ty Chan shot Martin. The issue is, what was the state of mind? And so what would go into that state of mind would be if the defense can establish that there was a fight and they had already been seen arguing and stuff, and if Martin had attacked Chan, et cetera. Was it an execution? Was it a reaction supposedly out of fear that caused him to shoot him down? You know, being drunk is not a defense to the crime, but it is a consideration on sentencing, generally speaking. Although a person does have to be able to form the intent of the crime at some level. But anyway, that's without getting into a bunch of details like that. So I don't know. I mean, what the best thing to do would be, you know, is obviously dependent on the details of the case. But I just find it somewhat fascinating. I've never seen that before, where they got locked up on three different outcomes. It's kind of interesting. So anyway, we'll take a take a little break here. I got a little more Errol Garner, the Concert by the Sea, which is considered one of the top 50 jazz albums of all time. And I think I told you that this was not meant to be. It was part of a USO is part of a military concert. They're putting on Garner and his, I think it was a trio, were going around putting on concerts, and there was a guy there that decided to record it in the military. And then the lady who was doing basically working for Errol Garner came up and said, "You can't keep that tape." Handed over. They took the tape back to Warner Brothers or wherever, Warner or whatever the company that he was signed to, and then they listened to it and they're like, "This is an amazing concert." So they put it out, and it was a million. It was a gold album. It just sold an incredible number of copies. Anyway, Kelly O'Connor, 619 AM, Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text. And Errol Garner was 5'2" and is famous for having to sit on phone books to reach the piano, but a real genius at the keyboard. Didn't read music. Played by ear and from his heart. So we'll be right back. And I got a lot of stuff for you today. And we're going to get into some of the border stuff. Be right back. It's 6:23. It's 6:23. It's clear out. It's 73 degrees. It's going to be a scorcher, friends. We're just to that time of the year. I'd like to see, personally, some rain. All right, so just a break. I just hope it's not a brutal summer. It seems like the last year or two we've had rain come in at the appropriate times and kind of break the back of the heat a little bit. So hopefully that'll happen again. All right, so... There's a debate that's going on. Donald Trump has attacked a judge that's on his case for Trump University. Now, he's attacked him because he's Mexican, but he's attacked him because he's in La Raza. And I just have a couple of questions for you. Number one, if it was a white judge, if it was a black defendant, if the judge was in, I don't know, Sons of the American Revolution, something like that, you know, some Confederacy reenacting group, or was in a group that was, white empowerment or whatever, would people be bothered by that? I think that they would be. Now, having said that, do you think it's inappropriate based on the fact that the, you know, Mexicans are a minority? We typically associate minorities with the right to advocate for themselves and join organizations. And a part of it is, I think, under the theory that the minority groups have a right to kind of mass themselves and get together and organize to better their lot in life and everything. I don't think anybody has a problem with that. But if it's La Raza, and I don't know enough about La Raza to stick in your eye. I think I've only read one or two things about them, but, it is a group that some people claim is and I've got a little, I'll just go to Wikipedia here for a quickie. History: that the term originated in the 1925 book La Raza Cosmica, English, The Cosmic Race, by the Mexican writer Jose Vasconcelos. He described La Raza Cosmica as the product of gradual racial mixing that was already underway in the Hispanic world. Vasconcelos believed that eventually all the people within the former Spanish Empire would be completely mixed into a new race. The term expresses ethnic or racial pride and is used with somewhat different shades of meaning in Spain and in Hispanic America. In Spain, Raza denotes specifically Spanish or European Christian Roman Catholic heritage. Francisco Franco wrote a novel under the pen name Jaime de Andrade, which was turned into the film Raza in 1944. The film celebrates Spanish national qualities. All right, so blah, blah, blah. All right, so that is the identity of La Raza. Now, if you know much about La Raza, feel free to 523-1450. But so here's the thing, and that part of it is, what is La Raza? National Council of La Raza is USA's largest Latino advocacy organization, a group advocating in favor of progressive immigration reform policies, including a path to citizenship for illegal immigrants and reduced deportations. All right. So bearing that in mind, some of you know what La Raza is, others don't. But in a situation where Donald Trump has been fairly or unfairly demonized for comments about Mexico and illegals and rapists and all this business, should a judge in this group stay on the bench in this case? Now, I'll just leave it out there for you. I don't know. All right, here's Trump talking about this.
Please say lengthy statement today as it relates to the whole Trump University case. Included in that is a website where people can look at the comments, the approval of all those students that liked your course. Two questions regarding this. One, do you think you should have stuck to the politics of the case, where the judge clearly has a political agenda, and do you regret that at all?
No, I like to say what it is. And so many people are now seeing that this whole thing is a disgrace. We have thousands of people, I don't know exactly, like 10,000 or something thereabout, where they're really happy with it. They gave it great marks, excellence, and very, very good, and all of these great marks. They wrote beautiful statements. We have thousands and thousands of these.
He's talking about, I believe, the description of the Trump University courses and the people that came in to get the degree, which is what the case is about.
Evaluations, where they evaluate after the course is finished. They evaluate, and I'm going through a trial. It's a disgrace. And frankly, I thought, and a lot of people thought, we should have won that trial on summary judgment. We shouldn't have to go through. But we're going to win it. Look, when all of these people come up and give you these great evaluations, like report cards, and also the people that took the course, the people that became plaintiffs, they have evaluations that are so incredible. I mean, these are the people suing to get their money back. They want to get their money back. The evaluations are incredible. And the woman who originally brought the case was a total disaster, an absolute disaster for the plaintiff. And what happened, I mean, they saw how bad she was. They took her deposition. She was a complete and utter mess as far as their case is concerned. So they go to the judge and they ask the judge, we want to get her out of the case. He lets her out of the case. And we said, great, that means we win the case because the plaintiff has just dropped out of the case. They left her out of the case, but he wants the case to continue. So it's really unfair. We have thousands and thousands of people, but I'm not even going to talk about it anymore, Sean. Look, I want to talk about jobs. I want to talk about our depleted military. I want to talk about our borders and drugs pouring through into our country.
But I
want to talk about
question.
Things like that. I don't want to even talk about it anymore.
But, you know, in my investigation, I found out that Bill Clinton got paid $16.5 million as being the chancellor of Laureate University, which is a worldwide, mostly online university, with many complaints in Rio, many complaints in Chile, many complaints in Latin America. He got paid this money. Hillary invited and included this group at a State Department dinner. $16.5 million is a lot. And as many, if not more, complaints than what you have gotten. But I don't think most people have heard
more.
Of Laureate University.
So I've got to believe
that's frustrating to you.
Not only that, look, an Obama appointee judge, which, you know, say what you want, but it was an Obama appointee. And the law firm appointed or okayed by the judge, the law firm gave hundreds of thousands. I think it was $900,000 or $700,000.
About $650,000,
in speaking fees to the Clintons for speaking. It must have been a great speech. But they gave that in speaking fees to the Clintons.
Yeah.
Plus, they contributed tremendous amounts of money to the campaign. Plus, they paid a lot of money to Eric Schneiderman, the attorney general of New York. They gave him campaign contributions. And the whole thing is disgusting. We're going to win on trial. Look, when you have thousands and thousands of accolades for this deal, that's why I never said.
All right. So what we're talking about here is a case, whatever the merits of the case are. Does it surprise you, by the way, Trump or Clinton gets paid $16 million to be on the board of a online college, and then they're tearing Trump apart? I don't know. So, all right, let's take a little break here and come back. And all right, so I'll just lay this out for you, 523-1450 or 805-6180 to text it. Do you think that somebody in La Raza, which is an you heard the description, a group that is advocates for the immigration policies to be liberalized, I guess would be the phrase, should that person stay on a case in which the defendant is notorious in the Latin community over that issue? I think it's a fair question. We got a call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, my name is David.
David, good morning. Hope you're well.
You and Trump are such bigots, man.
Is he?
You know, I've been hearing you, and I've been hearing
you
call a person that is born in the United States, you call him a Mexican. He is an American.
Mexican-American.
First of all.
David.
Secondly, no,
David,
he's an
David,
American.
David,
first.
David, David, come on
if
now.
He wants to consider
back
himself.
Up. Background stuff going on there that's kind of making some noise. But okay, so I can't call somebody a Mexican. Can I call him a Mexican American?
He is an American.
Was I'm
he born
asking
in the
you.
United States?
I'm asking you a question.
Was he born in the United States?
No,
yes or
I'm
no?
asking you a question. You're not
were
gonna
you born in the United States?
You're not gonna turn this around on me. I'm just asking you a
no,
simple
no, no.
question.
Were you born in
I'm
the United
asking
States?
You a question, David. Are you gonna cooperate? Can I call
Tell
a person
me, ask me the question
no.
again?
Yeah, the question is, if someone has Mexican heritage and they're living here, can I call them Mexican-American?
No.
Why not?
You can't.
Why not?
Because you can't, because he is an American first, and it's his prerogative whether he wants to be considered a Mexican-American or not.
So
let me tell you, where do your parents come from?
Where do my parents come from?
Where did they come from?
Alpha Centauri. My mom.
Come on, don't be that way.
David, come on.
Are you a German-American?
Hey,
do you consider yourself a German-American?
O'Connell.
Where does parents come from?
What is Dutch? David.
Is he a Dutch-American?
David, back off the espresso for a second. O'Connell, I'm sure you know that's Irish, right?
Okay.
All right.
Okay, so do you consider yourself an Irish-American?
Yeah, of course
I do.
Or
just an American?
No, I'm both.
So we can call you an Irish-American. And every time we get angry at you or you do something wrong, we can tell you to go back to come on, man.
David,
and you don't even know it.
David, hold on.
It spills out of your mouth, and you don't even know
David,
it.
David, hold on a second.
Secondly, let me make my second point.
Well, I want to answer your first point.
Let me make my second point.
I know, but let me respond to you. I'm going to pull your mic down here for a second. I used to live in Ireland, so if somebody said to go back to Ireland, I would be offended. What's that?
Wait a minute. I've never heard any one of you guys get all those guys from the KKK and call them Germans or stinking Germans.
Well, wait a second. The KKK is not Germans. You're confusing Nazis with the KKK. The KKK goes way back into the Democratic Party. You're aware of that, right?
Do you call them wherever they came from? Do you take away their American citizenship? No, you don't. Just Mexicans. What is it with you white people that you hate us so
Hold
much?
On a second.
What is it that you white people, even without even thinking about it, you guys hate us?
Without even knowing it, you insult us. David, hold on a second.
I tell you what, man. I wish Trump would come over here to Las Cruces and call some of us over here, dirty Mexican and rapists and all that stuff without his bodyguards or without anything. He would not make it out.
Would you do a cage fight with Donald Trump?
Would there do a cage fight? He'd be down so fast, buddy. He'd be down so fast.
Well, so you can't, nobody is allowed to say anything about anybody's racial background. We're just all Americans.
Not in the bad way that you guys do it. You guys use the word Mexican as an insult. You try to make it as an insult.
Hold on a second.
It is not an insult,
David, hold on a second. How do you know I'm doing it as an insult? I'm trying to describe the situation in this case so that people can understand that the judge...
It's the way that you guys use the words. It's
what
the way
guys?
That you say them. It's the way that you repeat them. It's everything. Just because a man belongs to La Raza doesn't take away his citizenship.
David, understand that we as Americans can join any
organization that we want to.
I understand.
If we want to.
I understand, but you're getting...
And because you belong to La Raza, it does not take away your citizenship.
David,
it does not make us less American.
David, I mean...
Do you understand that?
David, get a hold of yourself for a minute. You're on the radio.
I am angry at you guys. I'm angry
who
at all the white
guys?
People that
who
talk the way you and
white
Trump
people?
Talk.
You're angry at white people?
You are such a bigot, man. You should be taken off the radio in Las Cruces. Go to the East Coast if you want to speak that way.
I'm a bigot, all right.
You are such a bigot, man. You know what? You don't even deserve my conversation. Goodbye, guy.
Thanks for the call, David. All right, so nobody's allowed to refer to anybody's racial background unless they have written permission. Let's take a break. 6:37 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, and 805-6180. First time I've been called a bigot on the air. Thank you, David. We'll be right back. Well, thanks to Ben Rossen for sponsoring the show. And all right, back to David. All right, so I asked basically the question was, and I'm trying to set the, I was trying to set it up so we could see the natural outline of the issue. You've got a Mexican American judge He's a member of La Raza. I was going to ask David what La Raza stood for, but he was too overwrought. And he was all hyped up on his, from what I can tell, espresso. I hope if you know David, please go do a welfare check on him. But I mean, seriously, if you're going to call up and make a point, why do you think that it makes your point more credible if you got you get overly emotional and won't respond to questions and raise your voice and then tell the person that they're not good enough to speak to a Mexican American or to speak to David or whatever? So I don't normally, not that I think it really matters, but I don't normally, you know, refer to anybody who's Mexican as a Mexican American. My point being is this guy's, the judge is a Mexican American. He's a member of La Raza. Trump is, you know, so, which is a pro-immigration group. And for broadening immigration laws, making it easier for illegals to stay and such, which is fine. That, you know, whatever group you want to be in, unless it's NAMBLA. But, you know, by all means, free. We, in America, we believe in free association and freedom of speech. So by all means, if that's what you're into, join a group. But with Trump in the case, Trump brings this up. And I haven't even heard all the stuff that Trump has said about this guy. And knowing Donald Trump, is probably some of it is either is insensitive or sounds insensitive. But my point being that, is it wrong for me to describe this judge as Mexican-American if he is in fact Mexican-American? Do I need written permission from this guy? And according to David, you can't, from what I gather from David, you can't refer to someone from their heritage. I mean, am I supposed to break down in tears if someone calls me Irish American? You know, it's a description. It's my background. So, I mean, is there something horrible about being Mexican that it can't be mentioned? That's what, you know, when I'm talking to this guy, he's so over the top that I'm starting to think is like, is there supposed to be something scandalous about being Mexican? So would it be better to call someone American Mexican? I mean, so anyway, but the issue, and I'm glad that David called in. Thank you very much for the call, David. But what I really wanted to get to was the question of the actual instance, which is, should the judge recuse himself? Is Trump wrong to have brought this up, or should the judge recuse himself? That's the question. So anyway, well, you know, David, thanks for calling in, especially if I'm not, you know, I'm not fit to be able to talk to you. It's a real pleasure. It's an honor. I'll remember this day always. All right. So let's take a little break here. And but seriously, David, if you call back, so emotional, because liberals have a reputation of being babies and trying to take over conversations and shut down the opposition and pouting and crying and name calling. And doing everything, including falling to the ground and rolling around and weeping. I mean, you know, it's okay to talk about stuff and allow other people to have a response. So 6:45 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450 to call in, and 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back. Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly, this is Jolie.
Hey, Jolie, what's up?
I'm just calling to let you know that the last call you had there was really out of hand. I'm Mexican-American, and I don't think there's nothing wrong with you calling us Mexican-American. My parents are legal immigrants from Mexico. I'm a Democrat, and I'm voting Republican for Trump.
Wow. Okay.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, I do. But you got to stay on the line so we can talk about this a little bit on the air.
Okay. Sounds good.
No, that's a good call. No, I don't. I mean, I normally don't call anybody Mexican American. I mean, we live mostly a Mexican community, and you can tell from someone's name whether they have Mexican ancestry. But I was just trying to explain the debate between Trump and this guy. But I mean, there are those people out there that are, they're so caught up in their issues, you know, they're just, I thought the guy was going to start crying.
You know, in the Mexican, we have a saying, si te cae el saco, póntelo. It's like, if the shoe fits you, put it on. Like, you know, Trump says that they're murderers, they're this or that. You know, not all of us, and I don't feel offended. I don't feel offended. There's people, and he's talking for us that were silent.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see nothing. My family, they're Democrats, and they're voting for Trump.
Well, that's amazing, and I wonder how many people, you know, people make up decisions in private, and then they don't always share those. They're what their mind is made up to be. But I wonder how many Mexicans or how many Hispanics actually support Trump. But we're on the air right now, so hold on.
On AM Las Cruces with Kelly O'Connell.
It's Kelly 647, and we have Jody who's called in. Jody, good morning to you, and you wanted to talk about the last caller.
He was way out. I mean, he's crazy. I'm Mexican-American. My parents came from Mexico legally.
Is it an insult? Is it an insult to be called Mexican-American?
No, sir. There's nothing wrong with being called Mexican-American. Nothing whatsoever. And you know what, Kelly? I'm going to tell you something. We're Democrats, and we're voting Republican for Trump.
Why?
Why? He speaks for us, the quiet ones, that, and we know he's saying the truth. You know, there's a lot of people that come illegal. The first thing they do, food stamps. They have a kid, welfare. You know, and like we say, you know, if the shoe fits you, put it on. It doesn't fit me, you know, I don't put it on because I don't feel like I'm a murderer, a rapist, or anything else. You know, there's people that are of all races. And, you know, most of them, the ones that are coming out, they're Mexicans. And I'm sorry, but you know what? That's the way it is. And if the last caller didn't like it, tough for him.
Well, but I mean, you know, this is a Mexican community. I think of it as a Mexican community, and I think it's a great heritage. It's one of the reasons that I moved here, and this is before I realized there was this war going down in Juarez, is I wanted to go down into Mexico and spend some time and get to know the culture, because I have this belief that you have to immerse yourself at some level to get to know another culture, you know?
Yeah, you know what? I wonder if he loves to eat Mexican food.
Yeah, I mean, the way he talked about it, it was shameful. My response is he's ashamed of it, and he's upset that somebody mentions it. And everybody has a culture that has some pride or some achievement in it. Every culture has some achievements to be proud of.
Yeah, you know, I'm proud to be Mexican-American. There's nothing wrong. And I bet there's a lot of people here in the community. You know, I don't know what's wrong with these people, the younger generation. I guess they think they don't have parents or uncles or grandpas that came from Mexico. And that's the roots, Mexican.
Yeah, but I mean, it is the Mexican culture is what makes our community unique.
Unique, yes,
and
sir.
And also, and I mean, you know, one thing you can say about Mexican culture, friendly, down to earth, hardworking. The Mexicans that I know are very patriotic, so it adds to America, doesn't subtract from America.
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with that guy. I mean, he needs to go to school back, you know, and get some lessons.
I think he went back to bed and he's sucking his thumb right now.
Well, suck it in and stand like a man. Take it like a man, you know. Like all those commissioners that lost, they got to, you know, suck it in and stand like a man.
Yeah.
Like a man, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And to Wayne Hancock, enjoy your Greyhound trip back to what did we name the city that he's from?
Carpet Beggars, something like that.
Carpet Beggar City. Jody, a great call. Anything else?
No, you know what? I was one of those people that I donated money for Ramon Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Campaign.
He's a good guy.
And thank you.
He's a good guy, and I met
yeah,
him. He's an icon.
Yeah.
He is an icon in his community. I tried to get him on the show, but we'll get him on here. But I met him. He's a very down to earth guy, and he's obviously someone who has a lot of respect in the community. That's who you want to come in and serve in these positions, not someone who has come from another state a month ago and said, "I'm going to lead this community forward." You know.
Yes, sir. You know, we need somebody that's going to do the people's will, not their will.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Jody, thank you. A wonderful call. I think it's a first-time call, but I really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. All right, folks, let's take a little break here. David, spit that thumb out of your mouth. Stop freebasing espresso. All right, 652 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE 523, 1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text. I'll get into the text from today and yesterday. It's 6:55. It's Kelly here and David. David just called. I appreciated the call, but David, Richard Simmons just had some very invasive surgery. He just got implants, female hormones, and he was castrated. You may be next. All right, here's a little bit of weather for you. If you continue to act like a baby and cry like a girl, you may be next. All right, here's a little bit of weather for you. Three quick clips.
Yep, you're going to need all the tricks to cool off this weekend. Manchester, Tennessee, already seeing hot temperatures, but it is going to get even hotter. We are talking extreme heat that is moving in, with more than a dozen states looking at record-breaking temperatures by Saturday. So this is going to be some brutal heat, and it's for a good chunk of the country. This goes from the plains to the Midwest all the way down to the deep south. Plenty of 90s there. By the way, a lot of these major cities, Chicago, Cincinnati, this will be the first time they've seen 90s this season. But the hottest day is going to come on Saturday, and that's where we could see record-breaking temperatures for a lot of cities. Check this out. We could get to 94 in Cincinnati on Saturday. Couple of places making a run at 100 degrees. Nashville, the last time you saw temperatures that hot, it was back in 2012.
Wow. All right. Here's a little bit more thunderstorms.
Well, the Northeast is going to get it again as far as severe weather goes. You remember last Sunday we had some severe weather in the Northeast. Well, now we're going to go a couple more days coming up here for the end of the week and into the beginning of the weekend. So we're talking Friday and Saturday. And we're going to start off on Friday with a chance for some severe storms in the Great Lakes and also a little chance up in the upper Midwest into the northern plains. So we'll watch out from, we'll say, about Duluth over toward Fargo, a couple of storms that could produce damaging wind and hail. Also, I mentioned the Great Lakes, parts of Indiana into western Ohio from Lima down to Dayton and into, I'll say Cincinnati even as well. Saturday, the threat's going to move toward the east a little bit. So this is going to be kind of the interior Northeast and the Great Lakes. Once again, mainly damaging wind and hail. Can't rule out an isolated tornado, but this will certainly be a good chance for some severe weather.
All right, and one more little clip here about Florida.
Tropical storm Colin's gone, but more rain is in the forecast. Days of rain for Florida. That is certainly going to bring some flooding concerns. So we're looking at rain bands that will continue to move over central Florida over the next few days. So Thursday into Friday, and then this starts to clear out by Saturday. But some decent rainfall expected through central parts of Florida. We could see 2 to 3 inches of additional rain, some isolated spots of 3 to 5 inches.
All right, so anyway, 6:58, it's in the 70s already outside. It's going to be very hot. You know, I think one thing is it's hot. Another thing is it goes from like the 70s or 80s up into 90, feels like 90 or 100, so it's a little bit hard to take, but 73 degrees right now. All right, so you're a little sensitive about your heritage. I mean, I think everybody should be proud of where they're from, you know, because there are great people from every culture. They're heroes, national heroes. There are people that have, you know, made great achievements and be proud. You know, don't be afraid to be called Mexican-American or Irish-American or whatever, you know. Embrace it. David, embrace it. All right. We'll take a break on the hour here, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit about illegal stuff. David, spit that thumb out. Listen into the radio. And just a few things. Few developments, but I want to kind of like find out what does this crazy guy Obama want to do next? What is he going to do to, you know, I don't know. The guy's absolutely nuts. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text, and we'll come back after the break on the hour. Okay, 7:06, and all right, I wanted to wanting to get into the issue of what's happening on the border recently, and I think that that was a good call by that young lady who said she's Mexican American, but she's supporting Trump. I think there's a lot of, and she said the quiet ones, Trump was standing up for the quiet ones. I think there's a lot of Mexican American people that are support more conservative policies. And maybe they don't stand up as much and talk about it, but, you know, everybody wants a safe border. Just because you happen to be of the same nationality or race of the people that are coming over illegally doesn't mean that all of the people support that, you know? I mean, I just think that you've got to be realistic. The number one thing is to keep the border, is to keep the people in this country safe. The number one thing is not servicing people that live in other countries. I mean, that's an abdication of authority, of the authority given to the government to protect its own people. I mean, why? How have we accepted this idea? There's so many illogical things that have been presented to Americans that a certain percentage of them accept. If there are people that are struggling through no fault of their own in Central America, in a bad country, to whether narco-terrorism or crime or poverty or whatever, we then owe those people the right to come in here and immediately start enfranchising them and bringing them in and making them citizens and giving them government support and everything. Why? Why doesn't the U.S. government put pressure on these countries to, unless we're willing to take in all of the poor from these countries, which what would we have to gain from that? Is that common sense or is it supposedly selfish? Why don't we put pressure, because all these countries need our help. Why don't we put pressure on these countries to make their own countries more law-abiding? You know, why is it our job to sop up all the people that have to leave these countries because the state is so corrupt? It just makes a bad thing worse. It encourages these countries to not update or not reform, and it's a never-ending cycle. There's not enough room in America for all of the people that are unhappy where they live, right? That would be billions of people across the world. Anyway, here's a report on the smuggling across the border, including, I believe, the fear that they are smuggling in radicals from the Middle East.
There is disturbing new reports that a human smuggling network managed to sneak illegal immigrants from the Middle East into the United States through the Mexican border, including a man from Afghanistan who has known ties to terrorism and was part of an attack plot in either the United States or Canada. That man is in custody, but it raises serious questions about our national security and our border security. California Congressman Duncan Hunter is leading the search for answers, also co-chair of Donald Trump's Congressional Liaison Committee. Congressman, thanks for waking up early for us this morning.
Hey, thank you.
My understanding is you uncovered the documents that a number of these public reports are at least coming from. And in those documents, if I understand it right, the Homeland Security Administration is saying that this is a success because we caught the guys, not a failure because the guys were able to get across the border in the first place.
Yeah, that isn't true for a number of reasons. Number one, back of the napkin math that Border Patrol agents do, they say for every one guy that they catch, two or three make it through. That's just back of the napkin math. So if you catch one Afghan with terrorist ties, you can assume that others have gotten through. That's number one. Number two, when they first caught the Afghan, the Border Patrol's database did not flag him as a terrorist. They had to go to a different database, which then flagged the Afghan as a terrorist. And at the same time, there were five Pakistanis with him. We don't know where the Pakistanis are at all because they weren't flagged on anybody's database. So we're trying to track down whether they were released in the U.S., just like they were here in San Diego trying to find work, or whether they were flagged and kept in custody. So we're trying to find out, number one, why the databases didn't work. Number two, where are the Pakistanis that came through with the Afghan? I would assume that they all know each other. I mean, these are assumptions that are pretty easy to be made. Number three, the American people would have had no clue on this if we didn't get these documents from Homeland Security. The American people would have had no clue that what the Obama administration and Homeland Security tries to make it look like, the only people coming across the border are nice people looking for work. They don't have anything bad to do or say about Americans. That simply isn't true. The easiest way for terrorists to get into the U.S. is across the southern border. And in San Diego here, where I'm talking to you from, we have an actual border fence. We have 13 miles of double border fence with a high-speed road and spotlights. That's what needs to continue on through Arizona and Texas, because in this story, the Afghan terrorist crawled under a little fence to get into the right. U.S., and he was caught 15 miles in. So a lot of problems here, but the main thing is we don't know who's coming into the U.S. and what they're bringing with them. Yeah, we simply don't know. That's what's scary.
Well, Congressman, there's a lot to unpack here. Let's talk about the watch list here and the failure, sort of an epic failure of what was supposed to happen in terms of you catch these guys, you run them through databases. Is it as bad as it seems, or is this comedy of errors just a one-off deal?
No, I think it is as bad as it seems. So what you have is you probably have multiple databases with multiple government contractors that probably cost taxpayers tens of millions of dollars that don't talk to each other. And this goes in a whole different direction as opposed to using commercial software from Silicon Valley where everything would sync up. This is a monumental failure. If you think about 2001, we are 15 years away from 9/11, and we still don't have Homeland Security databases that sync up with the Department of Defense and the FBI and kind of a master terror watch list.
Stunning.
The Border Patrol agents that are on the ground and encountering these people crossing the border need to know who they're dealing with when they apprehend them.
Hey.
All right, so that's Duncan Hunter. And here is a little bit more from Babu, the conservative gay sheriff of Tucson.
It's about bringing Syrian refugees in. Are illegals from the Middle East already being snuck in? The Washington Times reporting a smuggling network has guided immigrants from terror hotspots in the Middle East across our southern border. We reached out to ICE for a statement, nothing yet. To Arizona Sheriff Paul Babu, what is this smuggling ring that are bringing people in?
Well, this is a Brazilian-based smuggling network that's actually working with Mexicans. And so this is troubling because here in this one report, we have 12 individuals who clearly are illegals. They're not from Mexico. They're from the Middle East, from countries of interest, from places like that are Palestinians, that are Afghani. And in this one case, he was traveling. This Afghan person was traveling with six total in his group, came across the Arizona border. And Homeland Security themselves said that he had an actual plot against the United States or Canada.
Now,
and thank God that he was thwarted.
Sheriff, were all of these 12 people caught?
Yes. And in this case, these 12 were actually caught, one of them 15 miles north of the Mexican border. But what's troubling about this is how many haven't been caught? And these aren't people just from the Western Hemisphere. They're coming clearly from the Middle East, and it should make this a top priority from a national security perspective to secure the border because of a national security interest to protect America and our families.
Now, you're the sheriff of Pinal County in Arizona.
Yes.
You're not on the border. You're a few miles north of the border. But illegals do come through your county because you're kind of at a crossroads. By the way, our viewers are now seeing Donald Trump's plane. I think he's arriving there in Redding, California.
All right. So anyway, you got it from the Paul Babu, who's a real patriotic guy. And just like the other sheriff whose people hate his guts, whatever that guy's name is, these people are on the, it seems like they deal with more illegal issues than we do. I don't know why, but maybe because, you know, Tucson and Phoenix are bigger cities, but anyway, Paul Babu was the guy that came out and said that be careful going out into the desert because there's assassins out there that are cartel. Why hasn't Obama secured the border? What does Obama care about? Would he rather get as many people in here as possible from other countries, even if some of them are dangerous? And if so, why? What does the president stand for? We have a call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly. It's Karen.
Hey, what's up?
I just wanted to say something about Sheriff Babu.
Yeah.
For people who don't know him, he's a Democrat. He's a lifelong Democrat.
I thought he was a conservative, but I know he's a gay guy, but he's very conservative on law and order issues.
Yeah. But he's a Democrat. And when he ran for reelection a couple years ago, really nobody knew he was gay. But it was the Democrats that they ran somebody against him because they didn't like his stance on the law and the border. And they're the ones who outed him as being gay. And he's a good guy. And so I just want people to realize that this is not a Republican saying this. This is one of their own, a Democrat, and he speaks the truth.
Well, you know how it is in that group of people. If anybody stands up and has an opinion that's not part of this, you know, prefabricated
scenario,
propaganda that they put out, they try to kill them.
That's right. Okay. Anyway, I just wanted to put that out there.
Thanks, Karen. Okay. Have a good day. All right, let's take a little break here. Errol Garner, we'll be right back. 717, more on illegals that are not from the Middle East, but there's been a spike in immigration. The president is doing everything he can, everything possible to get as many illegals into the country and put them into the system. What is he trying to achieve? And is it an example, as I've suggested, of killer, agnostic, atheistic, whatever you want to say, liberal, messianic movement where these people think that they're world spirits, that they are great men, they're statesmen, and they're going to change the world? Well, let me tell you one thing. When Obama ran, he ran in the name of the freedoms, cutting the debt spending, unifying the parties, post-racial, post-political. He's not that at all, obviously. After 7 years, he's been exposed. He is a person who wants as much big government as possible. He has the heart of a tyrant, in my opinion. That's why he's bringing in these people. Connect the dots yourself. 718. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell Show. Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, just have to correct the record. He is a Republican. My bad. I always like to be super accurate. It was the Dems who outed him as being gay.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, adios. Bye.
Thanks. Hello.
Hey, Kelly.
Yeah.
See if you can find that clip of Hillary saying we should empathize with our enemies.
I'll see what I can do.
That's the most chilling thing she's ever said. That I think she's ever said.
All right, thanks. Another phone call from Karen who said that Babu is actually Republican, but the Democrats added him as a gay to get rid of him, and it didn't work. Somebody else has called in and dropped a dime on a haggard-looking Hillary. December 4th, 2014, this video was posted. Hillary, we must empathize with America's enemies. Check it out.
This is what we call smart power, using every possible tool and partner to advance peace and security, leaving no one on the sidelines, showing respect even for one's enemies, trying to understand and, insofar as psychologically possible, empathize with their perspective and point of view, helping to define the problems, determine the solutions. That is what we believe in the 21st century will change the prospects for peace. This is what...
All right. So question is, how did that work out for her in terms of what kind of a job did she do as Secretary of State using this empathize with your enemies strategy, which she talks about? Is that not liberalism incarnate? What if your enemy, which would be in some instances Iran, who has an absolute commitment to exterminating the Jews, how would we use that information to empathize with them? And to, should we empathize with serial killers and pedophiles? And are there some situations where where not empathizing is actually better? All right. So there's this article here, Congressman, Obama administration withholding information about 86,000 criminal illegal immigrants, from the Washington Free Beacon. This is from June 3rd. This is from 6 days ago. And this is Representative Brian Babin is saying that the Obama administration is withholding from Congress and the American people detailed information about more than 86,000 illegal aliens who have committed serious crimes in America and continue to walk the streets in the United States. And he is saying, well, he's trying to get them deported. But as to the reasoning, all I can think of, this is a quote from him, is that they don't want the general public to know what's going on. When you have 86,000 criminal aliens committing 231,000 crimes over the last 2.5 years, people don't know what's going on. If people knew, they would be outraged, and the families of the victims would be absolutely astounded and outraged. The Immigration and Customs Enforcement Bureau deported 410,000 aliens in 2012. And it received $2.8 billion in taxpayer funds to do so. The agency expelled about half that, 235,413 aliens in 2015, but received even more, $3.5 billion. And so deportations dropped by 174,436 over the last 3 years. And what percentage of people who overstay visas get ejected? Less than 1%. Now, he mentioned the 10,000 Syrian refugees that they want to bring in over the next year. He said that, how can you bring these people in when you can't do any background checking on them? I mean, it's an open question. And listen to this. 179,000 criminal illegal aliens who have been ordered deported from the United States continue to roam free, according to the Senate Judiciary Committee. I mean, this, you just hear this stuff and you're so absolutely astounded. Now, here's a little clip from Central American crossings surging absolutely just through the roof, knowing that if they can get here, Obama will give them a home. He'll give them money. He'll give them a place to live. And they get a lot of money. They get a lot of support.
Yuma County Sheriff Captain Evan Bratcher revs through the soft sands that threaten to swallow his four-wheel drive truck along the Mexican border. It's a region where migrant traffic dropped to a lull as quiet as a haunting desert dunes, but now is picking up again.
Here as we're driving along, you spotted what's appears to be a homemade ladder. Suspiciously, about as long as the fence is high.
The Yuma sector is a 126-mile stretch of U.S.-Mexico border that evolved from rusting strands of barbed wire sprawling over white sand dunes into a feat of complicated engineering. It now ranges from steel vehicle barriers along the Colorado River, where Mexico, Arizona, and California meet, to a miles-long cage of tightly woven steel screen monitored by enormous lights and cameras. Yet, crossings persist.
What the word is now is that if you come across and claim asylum or seek asylum, turn yourself in. Give yourself up to the Border Patrolman that you see, and then here you are.
In 2014, Central Americans flooded the U.S., mostly at the Texas border, and by April of that year, some 28,000 lone children were among them. The number dropped by half last year, and this year was already back to 2014 levels with more than 27,000 children. The Yuma sector has seen its own spike. In 2014, 178 children arrived here. By March this year, that number reached 1,500. CBP officials declined an interview and attribute the growth to seasonal trends. In February, CBP Commissioner Jill Kerlikowske asked the House Appropriations Committee for enough funding to manage an expected 75,000 children at the border.
And we remain concerned about seasonal increases later this year and in fiscal year 2017.
He asked Congress for $12 million for the surge and a contingency fund of up to $23 million. Two Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents help a pair of women with children off a government van and into a shelter at a Yuma church. Marisol asked that we not use her full name. She fled Honduras in April after two uncles were murdered. She followed a route she was told about that brought her here to Yuma. She tied her four-year-old son to her back in a makeshift sling, then climbed over the first of 12-foot-high security screens, dropped into the U.S., and surrendered. Melanie Nelson is with Yuma County Interfaith. She says about 25 mothers are now dropped off every week.
If they've gotten here, they've made it. This is the easiest part of the trip where there are bus drivers that are there to protect them, much more so on their road to their families than at any other time on their trip.
Beatriz Escalante hitchhiked here from Guatemala. She also surrendered after climbing the wall. She did it for her child, she says, because there's no work in Guatemala. For now, she has a Greyhound bus ticket and an immigration court date ahead of her in Chicago. She sits in the grass by a water fountain with her toddler in one arm and wait. Reporting from Yuma, Arizona, I'm Michelle Marisco.
All right. Question. Do we owe it to people in other countries to bring them in? In other words, is what we have, let me kind of state it in one way that you could argue this. It is not through anything that we've done in America to... That there's nothing from we won the lottery. We were born into America. We got lucky. Therefore, we need to be generous with what we have here. And therefore, if there are hurting people in other parts of the world, we need to be totally open to them relocating themselves and deciding that they are going to come here, not us bringing them in, or not our decision. We're just going to decide to take whoever shows up. When those people show up, we have an absolute duty to bring them in. Do you believe that? Kelly O'Connell, 732. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBU, 523-1450. To call in 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back. All right, so here's this weird story. It's from the Daily Signal. Department of Justice wants to hide the names of illegal aliens granted amnesty. Now, it's got a picture of the head of the Justice Department, Loretta Lynch. Justice Department resisting judge's order to provide ethics training for its lawyers and is objecting to turning over to the court the names of illegal aliens who were granted what amounts to administrative amnesty or deferrals in stark violation of an injunction issued by the court on May 19th. Judge Andrew Hannon of the Southern District of Texas, and we're talking Fed Court, of course, issued an order imposing sanctions on the Justice Department and its lawyers for unethical conduct, which included repeatedly lying to him in court And U.S. v. Texas is an immigration lawsuit filed by 26 states against the Obama administration over its plan to provide deferrals, work permits, and other government benefits to almost 5 million illegal aliens. And Hannon issued a preliminary injunction in February 2015 preventing implementation of the plan, and his decision was upheld by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. And Hannon issued his sanctions order because of the misbehavior of the Justice Department. Now listen to this. Those lawyers, when the case was before him, he severely rebuked the Department of Justice for claiming that the president's plan was not being implemented prior to his issuing his injunction order, when the government knew that it was being implemented by giving amnesty to over 100,000 unnamed aliens. When he found out, he ordered the government to reverse its behavior and void these deferrals. And, I mean, that's just absolutely shocking. Absolutely amazing behavior. Now, related activities. The Department of Homeland Security is quietly moving and releasing van loads of illegal aliens away from the border. Department of Homeland Security, and this is from June 3rd, so this is 6 days ago. Department of Homeland Security, DHS, is quietly transporting illegal immigrants away from the Mexican border to Phoenix and releasing them without proper processing or issuing court appearance documents. Border Patrol told Judicial Watch. The government classifies them as, quote, other than Mexican, OTM, and this week around 35 were transferred 116 miles north from Tucson to Phoenix to a Phoenix bus station where they then went their separate ways. So the Border Patrol, whose job is to catch these people and either, like, in theory, send them back or bring them in for processing and court appearances so the government can do background checks and decide what to do with them, is actually taking them by the van fulls. Oh my gosh. And just transporting them to big cities and just opening the door and saying, see you later. Or not. We'll never see you again. Security company contracted by the U.S. government is driving the OTMs, other than Mexicans, from the... David, are we allowed to use the term other than Mexican? From the Border Patrol's Tucson sector, where they were in custody, to Phoenix. The firm is called G4S and claims to be the world's leading security solutions group, or insecurity in this case, with operations in more than 100 countries and 610,000 employees. So we're oh my God, this is so crazy. So hard to get wrap your head around this stuff. We are contracting with a group that is contracted by the government, the federal government, to defy the laws of America and take illegals crossing at the border and drive them to big cities and just release, catch and release inside of America. I mean, that is like, oh my gosh, that's so crazy. People who say that there's no evidence that illegal immigration is going up, or that the government is doing anything wrong. I mean, we're not just occasionally breaking our own laws from the federal government. We're actually contracting giant companies to break the laws of America. All right. So let me just ask you a straight up question. Does Obama care about America? And if so, what does that mean? And is it not a messianic approach to, I mean, isn't it the Messiah, Obama as the Messiah? He's going to change America. And here's a little clip on Clinton vowing to support immigration reform at a campaign stop in Sylmar, where she brought in a bunch of handpicked listeners for this.
Democrat Hillary Clinton tackled the hot button issue of immigration reform during a campaign appearance in Sylmar tonight. KCAL9's Greg Mills was there.
Hillary Clinton enjoyed.
By the way, this is from CBS Los Angeles and was put up on the 4th, so it must have happened on the 3rd, I guess. So about 6 days ago.
Enjoyed a strong show of support at this speaking event regarding immigration. That's to be expected. Her staffers told us everyone here was invited by the Clinton campaign.
Immigration is at the center of this presidential campaign. In my first 100 days, I will introduce legislation for comprehensive immigration.
Yeah. Italia Garcia is the invited guest on the right. Her parents brought her here to the U.S. illegally when she was 10 years old.
I can tell you my dad, he's very patriotic, and he's actually, you know, he's one of the most American undocumented immigrants that I know.
The venue for what was billed as an immigration conversation, Mission College in Sylmar. The school president said there are about 1,800 so-called dreamers on this campus alone. Justina Aguilar can relate.
Paid for my whole schooling out of pocket.
She's a proud graduate of Cal State Fullerton. Others, like Clara Kim, here illegally from South Korea, goes to Azusa Pacific. She was able to get help with tuition despite her legal status.
I was able to get scholarships and grants through DACA.
DACA and DAPA are government programs which, among other things, allow children and parents to avoid deportation if they meet certain requirements. Clinton said she supports both programs, plus a path to citizenship. Citizenship is end of the rainbow stuff for Justina Aguilar and Cindy Mendez.
Both Aguilar and Mendez fully support what they heard from Hillary Clinton today, and they would love to support her in November. But given their status, they can't vote.
They're part of the estimated 11 million people in this country illegally who can't vote in an election that figures to greatly impact their future here. In Sylmar, Greg Mills, KCAL 9 News.
All right, let's take a little break here. Can't make this stuff up. It is so crazy. The people that support this type of thing, do you have a vision for the future? Or is it like the guy said from Vice the other day, they just want to unleash these forces of chaos and destruction and just see what happens? Of just what he called, I think, malicious interest to see change. Without knowing where it'll end up. 743 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, and 805-6180 to text. I just looked up Liberal Messiah and got some interesting hits from American Thinker, which I've published articles at, Obama as a liberal messiah. When liberals refer to leaders, they're not talking about the same thing as everybody else. One of the first acts of national leadership carried out by George Washington was to reject a crown. He was here to serve, not to be a king. And so we got rid of kingship, but the liberals have brought back this, and I was thinking about this on the drive to the studio today. Liberalism rejects, true liberalism is based in Marxism. Marx rejected religion. So you get rid of religion, you get rid of all of the things associated with it, and including what is our way of life is a Christian or biblical perspective, broadly speaking. But it also gets rid of this idea as the king is God. If you're a Christian, there's a separation, or Jewish or Bible believer, whatever. There is this battle that happens in the Old Testament, or this struggle in the Old Testament, and so the king, Saul, is waiting for the prophet to come and sacrifice before this, they go to war. And so the prophet doesn't show up on time, and the king sacrifices himself. He puts together the role of king and prophet, and then immediately the prophet shows up and says, the judgment of God has fallen on you. In other words, you're going to be kicked out of office. You're going to lose your anointing or whatever you want to call it. So the Bible separates the idea of religion and the political realm and the religious realm are separated. And what happens with liberalism is there's no more argument against that. And so those two roles are put back together. The state becomes a god. So, of course, the leaders of the state are messiahs or prophets. And that's the road to tyranny, right? So Barbara Walters admitted, and this is from the Washington Times, we thought Obama would be the next Messiah. So they're waiting for someone to come who's more enlightened and can save everybody because they're humanists. The best that that human life has to offer is out of humanism. It's not from any book, supposedly from some God that doesn't exist, if you see what I mean. That's their position. All right. Another story on immigration. Illegal immigrants kidnapping children to sneak into U.S. as family units, the federal government is saying. And this is from the Washington Times and was published 2 days ago. Illegal immigrants are kidnapping children and bringing them across the border, hoping to appear to be family so they can take advantage of lax enforcement policies. The Obama administration told a federal appeals court on Tuesday. Leon Fresco, a deputy assistant attorney general handling immigration, made this stunning claim as he defended the administration's policy of detaining illegal immigrant parents and children caught traveling together as they jumped the border. After a federal judge last year ordered the families quickly released, Mr. Fresco said it's served as an enticement for kidnapping. The law of unintended consequences, right? You got all these children who are traveling alone across vast swaths of, you know, thousands of miles. How far is it from here to the border of the, you know, El Salvador or Honduras or whatever? It's what, probably 4,000 miles, 3,000 miles, whatever it is. Children unaccompanied traveling across this Mexico trying to get to the border are in danger of being trafficked, raped, and killed. If they make it here, they're brought across the border, but they could be kidnapped too and brought in as part of a fake family. From what I understand, most of the women who come up here alone, traveling alone or with their children, are raped. Who does the raping? I have no idea, but it sounds like they've got an incredible number of females to choose from. All right, so that's going on. And all right, so here is a little clip. Illegal immigration up 57% this year to 550,000. And this is from the Washington Examiner.
Immigration has exploded 57% in less than 2 years, with at least 550,000 new undocumented aliens pouring into America in a trend that is set to continue growing, according to a new census data. In an analysis of the numbers, the Center for Immigration Studies found illegal and legal immigration have reached over 1.5 million a year, a new 15-year high, and a 39% increase over 2013.
All right, so the information's out there. All right, we'll take a break and come back. I've got a little bit more on the backwatch. I've got a clip for you. I think we've got time for it. We'll be right back. Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, it's Tom.
Hey, what's up?
They're giving Obamacare out to illegal aliens in California now.
Really?
Yeah, that's on the internet. I was just reading $750 million or something is given out to illegal aliens now.
That's
saying
nice.
That, you know, they would never be able to get it, but now they are.
That is touching, isn't it?
Yes, sir. We're $20 trillion in debt. We're able to hand out money like crazy, huh?
Well, I guess so.
That's amazing. Okay, Kelly. Thanks.
Have a good day, Tom. Thanks.
Obama.
All right, so here is a clip somebody just called and told me about.
Care for illegals. President Obama promised us repeatedly that would never happen, but it's about to happen in one state, and of course, taxpayers are paying for it. We'll bring you details.
Hotels are catering to illegal aliens using your tax dollars. A new bill is about to become law in California that would allow illegals to sign up for Obamacare under the federal exchange. If you remember back in 2009, President Obama said his health care law would not extend to illegal immigrants.
And remember the guy that jumped up and said, Obama, you lie. And everybody wanted to murder him right there. All right, here's Alex Jones on Glenn Beck's crazy, crazy cult that he's created.
Type in his name. It's like the official photo they put out with his face leering. He looks completely scary. And, of course, I'm being a little bit sarcastic here, but getting serious. Tell us what you really think about Glenn Beck, because I'm not here just to bash other talk show host. I don't really.
This is Tucker Carlson, by the way, he's talking to.
We do that. I agree with a lot of what Glenn Beck covers as a supposed libertarian, but he wanted to be the leader of the whole movement. He did a lot of stuff behind the scenes on affiliates we were on and with sponsors. I mean, this guy really, I learned, has vendettas for everybody and thinks he's the king of the universe and should run everything. I was told that by people at Fox. One time I was there to go on other shows, and the Fox high-level producer, a name everyone would know, has their own show on Fox, but also produces stuff, came over, had a steak with me at lunch, or part of a steak, they had a smaller steak, and I sat there after I'd just been on The View, and he looked right at me and said, Glenn Beck is climbing the walls that you're about to be let in to be on a bunch of shows. And I said, well, I've already been offered a show. They want me to do a pilot with ManCal. I turned that down last year. And I said, why does he care? And he goes, look, trust me. He runs the whole place. He's probably going to get kicked out. He's crazy. But he thinks he's Jesus. And now that was the quote. Now I've been told that by so many others. What was your take on Glenn Beck?
Well, I mean, my general view of Glenn Beck is that he's super talented. I mean, he's much more talented than I am, that's for sure. Radio, as you know, is great preparation for any kind of broadcasting because you have to fill all this air by yourself, and it takes a talented man to do that. Again, more talented than I am. Glenn Beck is a really talented guy. But when he started to conflate his own radio career with some sort of religious mission, you know, he lost me. And, I mean, I'm a pretty mainstream Episcopalian. Maybe it's my fault. I didn't understand it, but there was this mystic element that crept in.
It's cultic.
To his rhetoric. I mean, it made me uncomfortable. I will say that. He had this weird rally on the mall. It wasn't clear what it was about, but it had something to do with elevating him as a spiritual leader. And that's where you kind of lost me. I'm a kind of meat and potatoes, cable news guy, journalist. I've done it for 25 years, pretty straightforward. You know, here's the story. Here's what I think it means. I mean, it's, you know, I'm not here to redeem people or to save them from hell.
Well, the really creepy part is him saying he has the only answer and that Cruz is this anointed one. And that the children are their new priest, and that if we don't do what they say, we're going to hell. That is Jim Jones territory.
Well, it scared the hell out of me, I got to say. And again, I don't want to be judgmental, but it freaks me out when people talk like that. I mean, this is politics. The point of politics is, by definition, it's a secular endeavor. We're trying to solve differences without violence, without reference to the hereafter. We're trying to do this using logic, reason, right? And when you all of a sudden start imputing religious motives or significance to the politicians you support, then it gets way too heavy and weird for me. And also, by the way, the implication is if my guy is the Messiah or I'm the Messiah and you disagree with him or me, you're damned. You're literally looking at eternal damnation. And that's just a level of discourse I'm not comfortable with, because once you believe the person you're competing against is but evil, it justifies almost any kind of action, including violence. And so it makes me uncomfortable.
All right. So I thought that was a good clip. I hope that Glenn Beck gets it together, because he's really gone off the reservation. AM Los Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Thanks for listening in. We'll meet you back in 22 hours. Have a wonderful day. Enjoy the heat. Ciao.